JSE listed Fugile Property Fund Limited released their interim results today. For the 6 months ended September 2020, the company reported that its group revenue came in at 1.4 billion rand. That's down from the 1.8 billion rand revenue it recorded for the same period in 2019. Operating profit was also knocked, coming in at 731 million rand in the period. That compares with 1.34 billion rand that was achieved in the year prior. Headline earnings per share came in at 27.99 cents. That's down dramatically on the 82.99 cents it achieved in the year before. On this occasion, the board has opted not to give shareholders an interim dividend. Well, to tell us more about their experience and the impact the pandemic has had on the business, I'm joined on the line by Lawrence Rapp. He's the CEO at Fugile Property Fund Limited. Thanks very much, Lawrence, for joining us. Now, we know that national lockdowns around the world have been particularly disruptive for retail and office property players. But I see that in the period under review, you note that you managed to keep your vacancy rates at around 3% in the South African market and 1.5% in your Spanish portfolio. How did you manage to keep these numbers contained?
Great. Thanks, Nandi. Look, I think it's been a very, very focused effort from our leasing teams in both markets. Mm. I think it's also very much symbolic of the approach that we've taken, which is to really work with our tenants. We decided really at the beginning of the COVID crisis that this was about a value chain. This was not sort of one party trying to score, you know, wins over the other, but rather working together to ensure sustainability. On both the tenant side and the landlord side, and I think that's what's come through.
Yes.
Look, I must tell you that at the start of the crisis, we would have expected much worse figures. You know, in terms of vacancies, we thought they might have been a lot higher.
Yeah.
But the teams have been brilliant in containing them, and also what we've seen is very vibrant letting activity. So yes, we did have, you know, nearly 9,000 square meters of space vacate in the period.
Mm-hmm.
But we re-let over 8,000 of that.
Okay, that's not bad.
So we have seen a lot of retailers that are maybe off the radar screen because they're not listed.
Mm.
But these are very big and very successful retailers that are seeing this as an opportunity to grow their business.
Yes.
And get space in the best malls and the best space in the mall. You know, where they previously couldn't access that space. So it's been a far more vibrant letting environment than we initially thought.
What did that mean for them in terms of their entry point? In other words, did you have to downwardly revise your rental expectations in order for them to come in?
No, not necessarily. You know, if you look at our results, in South Africa, our vacancies were contained at minus 2%.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the market was expecting a much higher number than that, but so we contained it at minus 2%.
Yes.
But what's more impressive for me than that one number is to actually look at the overall trend of leases being signed. So we signed about 170 leases over the period.
Okay.
77% of those leases were either flat or positive.
Okay.
So only 23% of the leases we signed had a negative reversion.
Right. So
okay.
Continue.
And if you look at the Spanish portfolio, we actually had growth in reversions of 4.6%. So we didn't have to, you know, sort of take any major negative reversion in order to fill that space.
Yeah. Now, what proportion of your tenants in each of the markets needed assistance in the form of rental deferrals and or discounts? And given that you indicate that rental collections now stand above 90%, does this indicate that most of your tenants have caught up with their obligations?
Yes. So, you know, I was trying to find some of the details. There's a lot of information here because we break it down by different categories and so on. So if you look at our national tenants, let me take a step back. On aggregate, we gave 133 million rands worth of COVID concessions across the portfolio,
mm-hmm.
which is equivalent to approximately 1 month's rent in the portfolio.
Right.
If you look at our national listed tenants, that works out to about just under 80% of 1 month's rent. In the case of the mid-tier and the SMEs, it was at about 1.5 months rent. So really, the smaller players needed more help, and we were able to come and help them, you know, at a greater level
mm-hmm.
than the national and large listed players have got much stronger balance sheets and were able to withstand, you know, the COVID challenges better than the smaller players.
Right. Now, we know that infections are raging again in Europe. What's the story in Spain, and are you yet again being exposed to some levels of restriction?
Sure. So look, there is most definitely a second wave in Spain. The good news, however, is that the data in the last week or so is indicating that Spain is now on the downward trend of the second wave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So when you look at rolling averages of daily infections, you can start seeing those figures coming down that from about almost 600 to down to about 300 at the moment.
Right.
So there is still a way to go. What we've seen is that the second wave in Spain has sort of seen more numbers of infection, higher infection rates, but maybe less severe, less virulent.
Yes.
You know, the death rates are lower, the hospitalizations are lower, and I think it's a function of the health system being better prepared for a second wave. I think it's maybe a younger cohort of people getting infected who haven't got as sick. Hospital utilization is not as high as it was. So there is no doubt that, you know, there is a seriousness about the second wave, but it certainly doesn't look to be as severe as the first wave. And as I said, they now seem to be on the downward trend of that second wave.
Yeah, but practically for you right now, are there certain areas, certain stores that you're having to close, or it's business as usual?
It's a bit of all, because what's happening in Spain is that they are locking down regions on a regional basis, not a national lockdown. So
okay.
We have one shopping center at the moment only that is in lockdown,
mm-hmm.
That's in Valladolid. We have one in Granaita, which is not in lockdown, but because of travel restrictions from local municipalities, footfall has dropped off on that one quite dramatically, but the other centres are open and trading.
Yes.
And, you know, there's been a very marginal drop off in footfall in the second wave. You know, nothing anywhere near like what we saw in the first wave.
Yeah. I know that in Europe, people are very keen on, you know, the festive season, and they start buying their Christmas trees already in October. From that perspective, how have you seen activity in terms of the traffic that's coming through the malls that are open and running as per normal?
So, look, as of the end of October, which is the most up-to-date stats that we have, our footfall is probably about 16% down on the prior year, month on month. So I think we've seen a very good and steady recovery. Also, bear in mind that recovery is taking place in an environment of social distancing, of masks, of sanitizing, et cetera. So it's not an easy shopping environment, and yet we're still seeing about 86 or 84% in Spain of the feet coming back to the mall. Sales, in fact, are doing better than that. Sales are only now running at about 5% off where they were in October the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're seeing is sort of a change in shopper behavior, where we're seeing sort of more of a functional, focused shopper coming in with a very defined list of what they want to buy.
Yes.
They're buying, the conversion rates are higher, the spend per head is higher, but they're spending less time in the mall. It's a less leisurely visit. So therefore, you're seeing, you know, the restaurants, the leisure activities taking more pace than some other categories which are doing a lot better. You know, homewares, for example, is doing exceptionally well in this environment.
Hmm.
Electronics is doing exceptionally well because people now are spending more time at home. They're happy to invest that money in their home as opposed to maybe experiences and eating out or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. Now, in times of uncertainty, it's good to have a strong balance sheet that can withstand difficulties. I do see that you've managed to whittle down your debt in the interim period, but generally, how's your liquidity and your ability to withstand any future shocks?
Look, it's very strong, I must say, when we go through that. So if I sort of just run through some of the key numbers, our interest cover ratio is sitting at nearly 4 times, and that's to having given around 460 million rand of relief at the EBITDA level.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see how strong the cash flows have always been in Vukile, and we're still in that same strong position.
Okay.
If you look at our undrawn facilities, we've got about 2.3 billion of undrawn facilities from banks. That's immediately callable, and that's spread across 5 banks locally. So again, you can see very, very liquid. We've already refinanced all of the debt expiring in this current financial year, and about 26% of the debt expiring in the next financial year. So we've made very significant strides in the last last 6 months to do
yes.
that. And when you compare our exposure in the debt capital markets to our undrawn facilities, we are really able to very comfortably repay any maturities that come up if need be. In other words, if the debt capital markets don't want to roll their debt, or if the terms are not attractive to us, we can easily switch that into bank debt because we've got these $2.3 billion worth of facilities available.
Right. Now, there's an ongoing discussion, debate, if you like, about the future of the office space. From your practical experience, seeing what's happening in your portfolios, while this is obviously still a developing story, what are your expectations?
Look, we really don't have office properties in our portfolio. We've got two very small offices. They're sort of, you know, non-core assets that, you know, one would look to sell.
Okay.
So we're probably not best positioned to comment on the office market. We, you know, prefer to stick to retail.
To retail. All right. No, that's fair enough. Perhaps by looking at each of your markets, the South African and the Spanish markets in turn, because they're totally different territories with different dynamics, what's the outlook going into 2021?
Look, you know, we need to take a cautious approach. You know, on the one hand, we have been pleasantly surprised by how the portfolios have performed over the last 6 months. They've performed better than expected when we went into lockdown in beginning of April, effectively. So that is sort of where the positivity comes from. The caution comes from the point of view that we just don't know. You know, sort of what the impact of a second wave is going to be in South Africa. Mm. In Spain, we're starting to get an idea of what that might look like. And therefore, we need to be cautious. I think we're in a very volatile environment, changing consumer needs. We need to be close to that. And I think we're investing a lot of money to try and understand those consumer needs and what's going to evolve. So we're sort of feeling, again, to use the phrase, cautiously optimistic, that we've got the right platform. I think we've weathered what's hopefully the worst of the COVID storm in much better than expected conditions.
Yes.
And hopefully that then provides the platform of which we can then look to recover, you know, to pre-COVID level profitability and get back on our growth path. But we do need to retain an element of caution, and that it just is a world that is changing so dramatically, and we need to be mindful of what those changes are.
Yeah. My very last question, just in relation to why I had asked you about the office space. You know, they're talking about an acceleration in e-commerce, maybe to a lesser, much lesser degree in South Africa. We're still very much in our infancy here. But in Europe, that could be a real possibility. Does that change any dynamics for you at all?
No, I don't think it does. Again, I think it's a story that, you know, is being presented in the wrong fashion. It's being an either or. You either shop online or you shop offline in store.
Hmm.
And in fact, the reality is different. The reality is that we're living in a world of omnichannel. And that means that any good retailer and any good landlord is going to have to find the right fusion between all the channels that they operate in. You want to be able to give a customer the opportunity to shop with you in the easiest manner possible.
Yes.
All the time. And we just got a great example of it. We've opened the flagship Zara store in our Bahia store shopping center, which is their most recent state-of-the-art omni-channel store. And that sort of is really sort of bringing the online buying capability in store. Okay. It's showing how you can move very seamlessly between the two. So we sort of are real passionate believers in this idea of an omni-channel world. It's how you're able to sort of service customers who want to buy your product, both online and offline, but it's not an either or, it's a both environment that we're in.
That was Lawrence Rapp. He's the CEO at Vukile Property Fund.